If you spend a lot of time with historical artifacts and looking through a lot of information, after a while, you do see trends, you do see patterns arising, and maybe from that you either become a trivia master or you start to put together predictions or conclusions. And while I'm capable of destroying a conversation with a lot of goat paths about trivia and tangential subjects, I also have some thoughts on the future. And one of these, which I've been cooking up for a while, is a concept that I call the Blorb. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The Internet Archive's ingestion machine is going along pretty smoothly. On the back end, we have our little dramas and the infrastructure falling down here and there and then being propped up and repaired. But on the whole, thousands upon thousands of items are entering the stacks every single day. I've talked about some of them and the variation and approach that people take. But looking through these materials, and I've been doing this for years, starts to give me some ideas about what the future holds. Let's go in layers. First of all, the aesthetics of different printed materials comes out very quickly when you do some high-quality scans. You look at something from the 1700s, the 1900s, the 2000s. You can see approaches to typography, writing style, picture style. It gives you insight into what people were thinking, or at least what they wanted others to think. Characterizations of cultures, the use of words, the use of information known at the time to speculate about what people wanted or what you wanted to talk about, it's all buried in there. There are endless informational cul-de-sacs down there. There's a book buried in the stacks that I may or may not be able to find again, which was a travelogue written by a soldier who had been sequestered in his barracks for a couple months, and he was under house arrest for some sort of altercation, but he decided to use that time to write a travelogue about his barracks. There's a cookbook written by the official chef for a pope who had been making more and more elaborate dishes for the Vatican and who had been spending years putting together his craft, this culinary orgy of everything known at the time, how to prepare foods and acquire them and what sort of numbers to use. It was written at a time that the Vatican was changing priorities because so much money had been wasted on extravagance. But this chef, this person who had worked all his life for the opportunity to be able to do cooking at the highest known level of that time, made his final masterpiece of a cookbook. And we have it, put into a machine somewhere, scanned and available to people, even with OCR and text searching for you to find just the right recipe that you will never, ever want to do. A collection of scanned, printed Americana from the 1950s included a set of Pepsi ads that I find particularly compelling because it was an attempt to classify Pepsi as the upscale alternative to Coke. These pieces of art are just beautiful. They're classic advertising. I'd never seen any of them. I have absolutely no personal recollection of ever seeing them anywhere, so they hit me full in the face. And I like to think that the computer ads that were part of my childhood in the 1980s hit a new generation every few years who didn't know the elaborate promises that these ads had. The archive is constantly pulling in these artifacts and collections. And the item counts are now in the millions all over the archive, going from books and movies and music, software, everything you could imagine created by the human experience is on there. People are feeling very free to upload all sorts of materials and make them available. They don't always describe them. They don't always classify them right. And all sorts of mistakes are made in digital ingestion and scanning. But the point It's coming. It's here. We're in a golden age of uploaded material. That's the first layer. The second layer is that besides ingestion, there's providing information. People come to the archive for various reasons. The vast majority come because they want to see an old website, and they go to the Wayback Machine, go through the Wayback Machine interface, archive.org/web, and they type in the domain name of something they remember, and if they're lucky, we captured it. People have a whole range of sub-reasons after getting the website. They want to prove someone said something that they now claim they didn't. They want to find an article or other paragraph they wrote that has long been plowed over. They want to see what a website looked like back in the 1990s. But also, they might be approaching the archive like it is truly a sorted, indexed conglomeration of specific material. And it is not. I watch for Twitter mentions of the Internet Archive and do my best to respond to people if they need help or are looking for some information. And many times I'll see somebody come running into the archive with a pretty basic piece of information that they want to look up, and they have a heck of a time finding it. Maybe they want to know about how big something was or who ran something from here to there, and it does not easily exist in our stacks. That's not how we're assembled. Right now, we are assembled as a series of federations of collections of material that range from incredibly well-indexed collections, often mirrors of something somewhere else, to essentially a dumped set of PDF files or WAV files that somebody has put minimal information on because, frankly, they refer to us from some other third-party website and they really don't care what it looks like with the archive. I know we want to be a library, but we're not quite there yet. We have collected stacks of information, but we do not have full-time staff whose job is to sit there at a desk and help you find it. It's just not there. Third level. The idea that I have been concocting a lot of this year is the theory that the Internet Archive needs to be looked at a different way. Instead of applying the standard ideas of what a library should be or what an archive is, at this point, with petabytes of information flowing in from every sector of human experience, the archive's collection is something more. It's very low resolution, like a camera that shoots at 320 by 200 from the 1990s compared to the high definition of today. It's extremely patchy, like entire countries being forgotten, languages and stories and histories missing. It's becoming a mosaic of human expression, experience, and the world itself, which I simply shorten to the blorb. My theory is that we are not necessarily building a library or an archive, although it is contained in there. What we are actually building is a blorb. While it could be interpreted as a failure or missing the mark or not achieving what we promise, I think it's actually something more. What's great about the blorb is its total agnosticism about information. The blorb doesn't care if things are in a Dewey Decimal System or bound within a book or listed with specific topics or approaches. The blorb is an example set for all of what we create. The sounds, the music, the writing, the software, everything that we are taking and making digital on the archive becomes a reference set, completely divested from its publisher, its writer, its creator, or the original object that's being digitized. If you look at the Ted Nelson junk mail collection, which is very simply a straight digitization of a pile of junk mail from all sectors of industry going from 1963 up through 1993, on one level, it's a recording of those junk mail packets, but it's so much more than that. It is a 600 dpi searchlight into the darkness of the human experience. Just focusing on a Hitachi manual for a analog computer system. It's not just information about this long gone and forgotten computer. It's also a capture of the words and phrases people used, the typography they chose, the structure of paragraphs on a page, and it has mold damage. It accurately portrays what mold damage can do to a piece of paper. The pictures themselves are taken using 1960s technology and then portrayed using 1960s printing technology. And the form factor of it, a small, thin brochure, tells you exactly how to send things through the mail at that time. In many cases, we've digitized the envelope they came in, capturing not just letterhead and logos, but also postage and envelopes and paper quality. A few years ago, my mind was blown. Somebody had taken years and years and years of ship logs, logs that were kept on ships that traveled the Pacific Ocean over many decades, and they had transferred it all to a very exacting route map of where all of these ships had traveled. In doing so, it showed tendencies towards different parts of the Pacific Ocean. It even showed the doldrums, the point in the Pacific where wind sometimes doesn't come for days or weeks, where the ships just lazily move along, and there are a whole range of superstitions about getting the wind back in your sails. Well, on this map, you could see all of the straight lines of the doldrums. This blew my mind because the ship's captains and mates who had been taking these coordinates were not doing it in the service of some imagined supermap that would be created a century later. They were just doing their job. But they were creating data, data that has now joined the blurb. There's a lot of talk right now about artificial intelligence and machine learning, and the term, like the cloud, is just being thrown everywhere. But there is unquestionably a new technique being used where it is possible to take a wide range of related information and start to build a filter where you can take a photo from one person, move it through the paintings of a master, and then produce a version of the photo that looks like a painting by that master. It's not perfect. It's rather new, but it works. I see that, and what I really see is an empty hole waiting to be filled with data. That data is the blurb. With millions of books scanned in from the last few centuries, with hundreds of thousands of movies brought in from YouTube and other sources, with all sorts of software stored on CD-ROM and floppies, we are adding to the blurb at an incredible rate. There are pretty heroic tales of trying to keep track of an enormous amount of information going from the 1920s up through to today, involving warehouses of punch cards and computer disks that were prototypes at best and cost incredible amounts of money. And while we can debate about the pros and cons of the current world, it is absolutely the case that we have processing power and the ability to look through information like never before. And not just that, the ability to reach out to virtual servers and utilize them and give them specific tasks that you can share. Combine that with the ability to share code on repositories and add them into these virtual servers, and suddenly somebody with a relatively small amount of training can begin to create whatever they want from the information that they can acquire freely from a very large, very considerable blurb. Right now, in 2019, there is a controversy that lives about the use of something called deepfakes. Most people have heard about it, but I'll go a little bit into it. It is possible to use a learning set of photographs of a single person, preferably hundreds of photographs, and then be able to graft them onto the face of another person. In other words, the code can do facial detection and then swap out, with some notable bugs, the face of the person for another. Naturally, this has been used for pornography to put celebrities on the face of porn stars. And while I'm not going to stand with a flag and declare that humanity's greatest achievement, it is a harbinger for the ability of computers to take information and use it to concoct more information based on a data set and utilized in ways we might not have ever imagined when this information was first being digitized or even created. It is my firm belief that within the next 20 years, it will be possible to take a 1920s scratchy 78 RPM record, utilize the learned studio characteristics of R&B of the 1970s, and have that music sound as if it was recorded in 1975. And to have these beautiful but constrained works, and to have them sound as if they're being recorded right in front of you, that's coming. The ability to run a 3D scan in your apartment and then tell it to give you ideas how to decorate it as if it was from a period of the 1970s or the 1870s or the 2030s, it'll just be another app. To put in the form factor of a circuit board and then tell a computer to take a shot at making it look like something designed by Eames or designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, it'll just do it. It'll give you a bunch of ideas. They'll be in some way engineered and tested by the program so they do what they need. And then you'll tell it to split apart this design, to give it to you as the minimal amount of parts. There's a SIGGRAPH presentation where, given a 3D model, you can tell it which direction you want the model to sit, and then it will redesign the model and make it full or empty inside to have it balance on whatever point you decide it wants to, making a bunny statue balance on its ears, or its nose, or its tail, create an elaborate image of a bug, and then have it balance backwards on its antenna. You can do these things now. I'll be the first to admit, there are aesthetics out there that make my heart sing. There's a certain striped 1970s look utilized in arcades and seaside resorts and Disney World that fill me with joy when I see them. They just represent some sort of happiness to me, even though all they are bands of solid color and colors that we don't even generally use anymore in this way. It makes me happy. I would love to be able to tell a computer to change everything up to look like that for a while, to make an LED screen that's constantly creating new variations of it using the data set I give it and letting it wash over me. Maybe for you, it's the aesthetics of a Maine vacation cabin or a waterfall. I realize there's going to be some sort of economic attachment to it, but being able to tell something everything that you like and giving it pictures or referencing it and then saying, are there more things like this? Well, we sort of get that now with music. You can choose a song you like and say, play me more like this, and it'll generally do a good job of giving you songs and performers that you may have missed. Well, imagine we're doing that with everything. Not just the songs we care about, but the ideas that excite us, or the aesthetics that make us happy, or the furniture that we want to live with, or the people we want to know. Recommendation engines combined with the ability to create new things, I see so much potential. This engine of shared creativity, of guidance in learning a world that you could never possibly live long enough to experience, it's going to need fuel. And that fuel is 100% uncut blorb. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Beghoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. My father stepped forward to pay my medical bills, so that is not going to be on my mind this year. Almost everything I'm caring about right now is tax payment, paying for my 2018 taxes as well as my 2019 taxes. The state of New York claims that I owe money from 2013. I'm making an attempt to have the interest taken off that request, but I'm going to pay the rest of it. No other surprise bills have popped up, so I'm doing pretty well. Steady as she goes, keep the wind in my sails, avoid the doldrums.